handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
To another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covin. It is 7:43 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday, May 26th, 2020. I am exhausted. I don't know if you can tell from my voice. I was supposed to do this last night, but I got caught up ordering things online, going against my general COVID policy, which is to not get people out delivering goods. But I am in the process of starting a new YouTube channel with some funding and some YouTube guidance, and it's causing me a tremendous amount of stress. I think I may have alluded to it in previous episodes, but last night I was up and I was ordering, basically turning my apartment in New Jersey now into a domicile / YouTube studio. And as a 41-year-old man who's been making cell phone videos for the last 2 months, tech and YouTubing is not really my expertise at all, so it's causing me a great amount of stress, and so I shelled out a couple grand worth of orders, mostly Walmart.com, simply because I'm just trying not to spend money at Amazon, which I've successfully done for about 20 months now. And then I get a message back from Walmart that my whole order has been canceled because of issues with payment. And I'm like, what is my credit card that has a balance of $8 on it? Not good. Very strange. So that got me in a bad mood last night. And then I was snippy with the righteous girlfriend. And then I went to bed furious with my heart racing, which is basically what's been happening for the last 2 months. I've either gone to bed with my heart racing in a positive way or in a furious way. And recently it's been much more in the furious direction. So I then woke up, of course, 5 hours later at like 5:05 and have been up ever since. Read a nice article in the New Yorker. That's always a good way to spend 2.5 hours in the morning with your cup of coffee, is one article in the New Yorker. the New Yorker's like, how would you like to read a book every week, but you get tricked into it by thinking it's just a magazine article? I don't have anything to really officially announce, but a lot of seed capital is coming my way, and it's causing me a tremendous amount of stress. Meanwhile, 10 a.m. today, I'll be back doing legal work, which stresses me in a different way. Because it's very strange to get your best job in 10 years, but also have your career, your comedy career, have its best year ever. And feel like you have to maintain both because you can't depend on either. It's very strange. But yeah, so I guess the YouTube big things coming in June, I guess, from me on YouTube. So that's good news, I suppose. As always, please go check out my albums, especially if you're a new listener or if you're a longtime listener who's just been incredibly lazy. I can't stress this enough. I need more people to, kind of listen and watch my stand-up clips and listen to my stand-up albums today. Oddly enough, last week, I guess I don't know if the title of this episode would be You Ain't Black, but obviously Joe Biden last week had his gaffe on The Breakfast Club, where he, of course, said it with a smile, and it was one of those things, I guess when you've got old Irish uncles, you're used to hearing jokes that are meant in a different way than offensive, but still can come off as offensive. But Joe Biden said basically to Charlemagne the God, who, I just hate even saying that name. I have nothing for or against Charlemagne the God, but like I hate that name. But Biden basically said with a smile on his face, if you're voting for Trump over me, then you ain't black. Now, then he got like hostile after talking about his record and et cetera, et cetera. And Biden is just, I don't know. I think he's going to win. I think he's going to win substantially, but it's just the idea of Joe Biden outperforming Hillary Clinton in the Electoral College is such a joke to me. I like both, but I'm like, I've had conversations. I've been disappointed recently in hearing from different people who are very anti-Trump, but then you find out they didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. And I just go, is that one of those, like, you thought maybe your stock portfolio would like be good, so it was worth the deal with the devil? Like, he is worse than sort of the worst predictions of his presidency. And I just don't understand. Joe Biden is a worse candidate, not politically, but substantively, is a worse candidate than Hillary Clinton in every single way. But politically, he's an old, genteel white man. And so I understand politically, he might be a better candidate than Hillary Clinton, who was a polarizing lady. I don't know. That's going to bother me for a long time. Because we literally, as I watched Michelle Obama's Netflix documentary, it's weird, everything's a documentary now, but her little, it's like a reality show, but it was nice, I liked it. I enjoyed her book a lot. It was like a nice, pleasant sort of memoir. And watching Becoming, Michelle Obama was talking about the people that she wasn't as disappointed in people who voted for Trump as she was in people who stayed home, because it's insulting to a lot of people, including the Obamas. And people came up with all sorts of rationalizations as to why they couldn't vote for Hillary Clinton, but none of them hold water with me. I get it if you live in a state where your vote, you feel like your vote doesn't count, whether it be New York, California, solid blue states where you're like, yeah, my vote doesn't count, so I'll vote third party, to try and get third party representation, or I can see the rationale there. But then, in a weird way, then it's like, well, then I don't really care about your opinions on any political race, because then no election matters to you. Like, you can't use it, it's one of those things, like, if somebody says to me, like, oh, I voted for Jill Stein in 2016, because I live in California, so it didn't really matter. Well, then why the fuck do I care about your opinion in 2020 either? Because your vote, then your vote based on the Electoral College won't matter, so, like, your vocal proclamations for one candidate or the other are also meaningless. So, like, you can't have it where your opinion and your passion matters in 2020 because, well, you were a Bernie fan or you believe in Joe Biden. So what? According to you in 2016, it didn't matter if you supported Hillary Clinton or not. That's what people say you know, the battleground state people are obviously the ones of more concern. And I think people do ignore voter suppression as one of the things that suppressed turnout, not just lack of enthusiasm, but there were other factors at play in battleground states. I mean, if you can't see what the fuck is going on in Wisconsin and know that that ain't just Hillary Clinton isn't cool energy that suppressed the black vote in Wisconsin. When you have a city of like Milwaukee with 6 polling places open for that special like judicial election, come on. But Biden, I think, is going to win. And then I think Trump is going to go full dictator. I know some people might find that alarmist, but you have to be, I mean, you just need to, I still can't understand how this isn't so obvious to everybody. This, like, I never, when it came to George Bush, who, you know, of my adult life is the only Republican president, you know, since I've been able to vote. I didn't vote for him. I voted against him twice. I was a huge Al Gore fan. John Kerry, I was like, well, I'm not voting for Bush. I don't think Bush is a good president. I think John Kerry has experience. I'm voting for John Kerry. But I never thought to myself, I had arguments with Bush supporters, but I never like thought, well, Bush supporters are terrible people. Of course, there are some terrible people in every political side, but I never thought en masse, Bush supporters are awful human beings. I believe that about Trump supporters, basically. Like, and you can say, oh, that's so crazy that you go to that extreme. It's everybody in politics, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, no, this, like, to me, having just read enough in law school and studied and read enough history, he is an abomination and an abnormality, like, on this country's legacy and history, Trump. It isn't a both sides thing. Like, no party has offered up somebody as atrocious morally and competency wise as Trump. It's not even close. He's a grifter. He's a disgrace. He's a terrible person doing a terrible job. And I think for a lot of his supporters, they, as I've said before, it's faith-based at this point. He is a faith leader. He is not a political leader, because his supporters get so much of their identity from their support of him. They don't look at the facts. Like, they are this mishmash of like hypocritical Christians, greedy, you know, greedy business people, and bigots, and it's this sort of, and stupid people, and the stupid people, I always say, I'm like, you know, if nobody hated Forrest Gump because you thought he had a good heart, but if Forrest Gump was walking around Forrest Gump saying the N-word and calling Jenny a fucking whore, would we have all just said, oh, well, stupid is as stupid does? No, we would have been like, hey, Forrest Gump is kind of a piece of shit. Even though he's slow, he seems to have a bad heart. So, like, to me, support of Trump at this point is a it speaks to your character as a human being. And this idea of when people always say, hey, you should be neutral on politics, I go, Trump to me is cancer. Who's neutral on cancer? Like, staying away from Bush, gently mocking Bush, I could see that. Because I never thought, and I still don't think, that George Bush was a man of horrible character. Terrible president? Sure. Terrible person? I don't think so. Donald Trump wears his awfulness like a badge of honor, and he continues to just peacock as a piece of shit. So, and Trump, also, I remember I saw on a friend's thread, I resisted the urge to jump in. Because you do see that, you do see, and I will get to that as far as it concerns my own people, because there's obviously, with my Trump impression, a real blurring of comedy and progressive rah-rah on my timeline that's starting to annoy me. But the Joe, when people said on this timeline, people, somebody said, they were saying like, I don't think Joe Biden's a racist, but I also don't think Trump is a racist. And I was like, well, you're starting off with like an immediate false equivalency to sort of project this idea that just because now I don't think Barack Obama hated America, but I also don't think that the Confederacy hated America either. And it's like, wow, so that's your concession of you're denying a blatant falsehood with covering up a massive lie? I don't get it. Like the idea of equating Joe Biden saying stupid shit with Trump, who has a 4 to 5 decades long track record of bigotry and racism, is bizarre. Like it's bizarre that people like somebody referred to it on this thread as like Trump puts his foot in his mouth. And I'm like, was it his foot in his mouth when he was like denying black people apartments in his building? Was that a whoopsie? Was the settlement, the out of court settlement, an oops? It needed a mulligan. You know, is the fact that he continues to insist that the teenagers exonerated for the Central Park rape, that he still thinks they're guilty? Is it the reference to black people as a black, like referring to a single black person as a black and black people as the blacks? Does that sound, when you couple it with his policies and his other statements, does that seem like just a gaffe, or does that seem like a bigot talking like somebody who does not respect the average black person as equal to him? Meanwhile, Joe Biden makes a bad joke, and the right so so faux outrage. They always accuse the left of faux outrage, but like the idea that you think Joe Biden's a racist because he said that is comical when you especially when you support Donald Trump. But so on the same. Like within a day of Joe Biden saying that on the radio show, I had my, 15th person accuse me of stealing my act from Sarah Cooper. If you don't know what this is, I went viral starting in March for my Trump impression. I'm sure you're aware of this by now. And a month later, almost to the day, so a full month later, a comedian named Sarah Cooper, who I don't even like being compared to other comedians that do Trump, because if you look at the vast majority of Trump impersonators who've made any kind of living or name for themselves doing this, it's sort of a backwater of stand-up comedy. I pride myself in somebody who has, without management or representation, accomplished quite a few things, a diverse array of things in stand-up comedy, including a lot of stand-up comedy work and some TV appearances. So I don't really like being compared to one-trick ponies. And I don't mean... part of this is derogatory, not towards Sarah, but to some of the other guys who have, I'd say, been mildly disrespectful because they're jealous and they're not as good. And the funny thing is they're not comedians of note. And now they're not Trump impersonators of note. So it's like I can understand why they'd be upset, because I took my diverse array of comedy talents and then stomp them out of their own Trump corner. But the faster people acknowledge and see my other work and my other skills, the happier I'll be. Because for me, Trump, is a 2020 money grab. 2021 to 2040, which I hope to be, my comedy career going forward, is going to require a lot more that I have in my possession and in my comedy tool belt. But, the faster I get away from this, the better. But I really don't like being caught up in the who's the Trump person, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I feel like, it feels like comparing, an athlete that does one thing with an athlete that does 8 things, and then saying, who's the best at tying their shoes? And it's like, that's all you're going to give me credit for. But I get it. It's the thing that's made me quasi-famous. But every few days I get accused. I put up a new video, which is ad-libbed, my own voice. The impression is fooling people. A lot of people write. I thought this was another one of those lip sync videos for a while. But then every like 10th person who says that is like some aggressive, usually a man, not always, but usually a man, maybe a man that wants to curry favor with Sarah Cooper, but who will say some shit like you fuck, like a real aggressive, like you fucking hack. Sarah Cooper's an artist and you're just stealing her shit. And those are the ones I always respond to harshly because as I wrote in a blog last week, you don't accuse me of theft after all I've put into this comedy business and all that I've suffered, not like, you know, in life, but professionally, all the sacrifices I've sort of made, and maintained a sort of integrity and purity to my comedy. I don't let that shit stand for a second. I don't care who's saying it. It could be somebody with 5 followers. That's not going to be out there. You're going to have to either look like an idiot or you're going to have to retract. And one person did retract and was very nice and effusive, but several of these people, always the guys, are always aggressive and they double down. So this one guy, who was like a progressive, he wrote, "This is Sarah Cooper's artistry. Find something else, you fucking hack." So I wrote to him, you know, one, I've been doing the Trump impression since 2015. Two, my videos began 6 weeks before Sarah Cooper's. Three, I'm not lip syncing. Four, I said, I didn't say go fuck yourself, but I said, you got any, oh, I said, anything else, you rude fuck, or something to that degree. And so the guy said, bullshit, fucking hack. So I was like, okay, well, that's cool. I guess he's so convinced that my impression has fooled him so much that he really thinks it's just me lip-syncing Trump. Now, I don't know. Some of the content I put out is pretty outrageous, and it's weird that people would think it's still a lip-sync. But, okay. So a bunch of other people write to him. Dude, he's not lip-syncing. He was doing it first. What are you talking about? So I think he then immediately switched. This guy's name is Graham. He switched, and he said, I don't care, man. I'm mixed race, and he's wearing a MAGA hat. That's like blackface, and blah blah. Like made this like ridiculous claim. Like, in other words, a guy making fun of Trump, doing a Trump impression, wearing a Trump prop, is now the equivalent of like a Klan hood. I think he also mentioned Klan hood. He said the MAGA hat's like a Klan hood. Now I appreciate that. But I don't appreciate it that somebody mocking Trump using a prop. Like, so anytime does when Alec Baldwin put on the Trump wig, is that a Klan hood as well? It was one of the dumbest takes as he tried to salvage some sort of like win from this exchange. So then I wrote, this guy, I'm half Haitian and mocking Trump, and he's now claiming that this is blackface and a Klan hood. I said, wow, he took, you know, something to the effect of he took a hard L on the first point he was trying to make and now has tried to switch the argument and is taking an even worse one. And then that's when you got the comment that I then blocked him on was, you're not half Haitian, you're a lying racist hack. And I was like, okay. So that proves obviously that, and this goes to one of the things that I was trying to write about this week, but I couldn't write the blog without sounding incredibly self-pitying and also really aggressive. Kind of like Trump, I guess. But what I've seen in the last couple of weeks is conservatives who attack me generally just go, they come with one of these arguments like, shut the fuck up, you liberal pussy. Or they'll say, hey man, you should keep it neutral. I like your impression, but I don't need your politics. But they never, and that's a certain thing where it's like, it's Twitter, it's my account, I'm going to do what I want. Like, I've blocked multiple people who are like, could you get a personal account for your own opinions? And I'm like, yeah, that's what this is. This is, the Trump attack always seems to be, I just discovered you and now I claim ownership over your content. And because I just discovered you, that is what you are to everyone and for all time. And anything that deviates from my discovery is not acceptable to me and therefore should be changed. I mean, I've had the account since 2009, but it's like, yes, most people discovered me in the last 3 months. That said, you don't get to all of a sudden tell me what my career and my content needs to be because you found me 5 weeks ago. But there's that. That's the Trump attack is sort of the what I think. And it's the Trump way. It's the sort of self-centered. I'm a victim and I'm also very self-centered. So any wound to me, that's why these Trump folks on Twitter always say to me, you just lost half your fan base, bro. Every time I write something political, and I'm like, my followers have not stopped going up for 3 months straight. Every day I'm picking up 100, 200 followers. Every day, without exception. So whatever I'm losing, I'm gaining a net of multiple hundreds. So it's this idea of like, you just lost. And I go, I didn't lose half my followers. I lost the people who vote for Trump, which is going to be about around 60 million people, maybe 61 million people this fall. In a country of 330 million people. So you have to explain to me, and I know they're not great at math, but you have to explain to me how that's half of my audience. No, I lost 47% of the voting population, which is less than 20% of the country. I'm totally fine losing every Trump supporter. That's just, it's like, I'm fine losing them because I don't want to actively encourage them. And like, if they want to watch my shit in silence or whatever, but like, you know, but the thing I will give them credit for is the thing they almost never say is some sort of comedy tip. They're never emailing me comedy suggestions. I get like 10 script, like wannabe sketches in my email every month or every, well, it was at one point every week where it's like, you should do this. And these are always progressives, but the conservatives, they may hate my politics and take it deeply personally. But the one thing I'll give them is they never try to get into the content. They never try to like, get in my face about here's what you should do, or here's why that's not funny, or here's what I think about comedy. They just say, I like the jokes, and then they interject themselves into other areas that I don't need them or want them to. Okay. But as a comedian, I have to carve out a little bit of a, not a thank you, but a little bit of a tip of the cap just to say, well, for all the things I hate about you, you're showing deference to the comedy portion of my comedy. So thank you. Whereas progressives, the term virtue signaling, I'm seeing a lot because I had somebody, and I don't think I talked about this last week. I think it happened after I recorded last week. But I had this exchange where somebody was explaining to one of my fans who was saying, hey, you should follow JL. He does like no lip syncing. He does all original ad lib and the best impression I've ever heard, maybe of anybody. And then some old white guy from Berkeley, and I'm not making that up, basically told that guy, you just don't understand the brilliance of Sarah Cooper. So like, to me, what annoyed me about that was it's this idea of, I get 5 to 10 tweets a day telling me I should collaborate with Sarah Cooper. And I'm always going in my head, I'm like, I guess I'll just take that as a compliment because they like us both. But in my head, I'm going there. What collaboration? Like, can anybody even articulate what that would be? I do original content in a perfect Trump impression. She lip syncs on TikTok to Trump. I don't get what the collaboration would be, period. So, but I let it slide. I just go, I let people have their fun. If they like both things, even though it makes no sense artistically, that's fine. Like there's no need to jump in there. But when this guy sort of did the condescending, you don't get it. And then I read an article in The Nation about her. And whenever you have, you know, some very progressive writer writing, you know, 1,000 words on a TikTok lip syncer and French phrases and the term inventing a new form of comedy, you're like, okay, this is this a Terrence Malick film? Just fuck Charlie Chaplin. Is this what we're elevating this to now? And when the guy wrote back, I commented, I said something to the effect of, why is everybody treating this like independent cinema? One white woman said to me, you were cool until you wrote this, because obviously I'm attacking their favorite star of social media. And the Berkeley guy wrote back and he was like, oh, JL, I think your impression is amazing as well. But what Sarah's doing as a woman of Jamaican descent, speaking the president's own words, is just another level, and adding her own pantomime is just another level of brilliance And I vomited in my mouth and probably didn't sleep well that night because it was because the condescension with the sort of progressive, I know better, because I feel good about this. So now there is this, what I've been seeing is this ascribing of like additional genius to something. I'm not calling it the Emperor's New Clothes because, as I've said before, I laughed. I laughed at her first video. So like, this isn't me going like, that's not funny, but this need of progressives to like make it bigger than it is, to make it this like amazing deep. And what bothered me about what that guy's comment was I was like, first of all, she's not speaking. She's lip syncing. Not, and I'm sure he would have understood that. He would have just said, well, no, that's what I meant. I meant mouthing the words that the president actually said. And then when he threw in the Jamaican, so he's obviously done enough of research or followed her stuff to know that she's a woman of Jamaican descent. So I wrote back to him simply, I said, well, I'm half Haitian. And I always thought, half Haitian comic. Well, Trump called Haiti a shithole. So wouldn't not, and I haven't pitched this, but in my head, I'm like, wouldn't progressives love the idea of a half Haitian calling the man who called Haiti, mocking perfectly the man who called Haiti a shithole country? Wouldn't that be righteous progressive revenge? And it's not, because I don't look it. I look like Adam Sandler to people. So you don't get the, and I wrote to the guy, I said, I'm half Haitian. Does that count? I know I don't look. I said, I'm half Haitian, but I don't look like it. So I guess I don't get the feel good, the irrelevant feel good vibes. And one of the things I've always done in my comedy, for most of you who may not know, but I have a decent amount of racial material. But a friend of mine in comedy, Josh Homer, had always commented, and I think respected the fact that if I started my set with a really good joke that's centered on race, but had not yet told the audience that I was half black, therefore giving many people sort of permission, if you will, to laugh at a joke. And I'm not talking about using, I don't use the N word. I don't use things like that in my act. I mean, just talking about sort of observations or funny statements that might be slightly offensive or, you know, good material though. But if a crowd didn't laugh at a joke that was really good, I would not tell them that I was half black, because I felt like they didn't deserve permission, because they were there, they were bringing their agenda before they were laughing at the comedy. And I can't think of a joke right now, but there are jokes where I might set up talking about my Haitian father and my Irish mom. But if I told a joke that was like an A or A plus type joke, but didn't tell them who I was racially first, and they didn't laugh, well, then I wasn't going to let them off the hook. Then they were going to have to stay in their progressive discomfort for not laughing at the joke, because I don't want to ease that tension. That's a tension I don't respect. And when this guy said that, wrote that to me, and he was not the first person to bring up the fact that she as a black woman makes it even funnier, part of me understands that. But part of me also understands that even if they know I'm half Haitian, as this guy never replied to that comment, we had a back and forth, but that comment he never replied to. And to be fair, I did phrase it in a way that wasn't particularly encouraging of a reply. But what I could see through that was, it's not just the fact that it's not good enough that I'm half Haitian, because on paper, that would, of course, make my impression even more beloved by progressive quote unquote comedy fans who really place many of these people. And it's one of those things, I guess, you live by the social justice Twitter warriors, you die by the social justice Twitter warriors, but it wouldn't be good enough. And I've joked about this often. I said, I have a story and a background that should make me somebody embraced by a sort of push for diversity, but I have a face that doesn't look good on diversity posters. And if you know me long enough, and the problem is maybe some of you don't know me, this, I've spoken on this a lot, and I've always said I think diversity of voices, diversity of origins is very important, but that I feel like the comedy industry and Twitter go about it sometimes reverse engineering it. Like, instead of saying, I've always said this, when you go to a comedy club, when they used to have comedy clubs, at a lot of clubs, I would look at the coming soon and it would be like half the acts, half the headliners would be black. And it was because they had put in all that work and built the fan base, and there was a thirst, and multiple managers of clubs I'd overheard saying, you know, the reason we're booking more black headliners is their fans buy tickets. They're not people steeped in maybe social media. They want that live experience. And those comics, those veteran comics, many of whom were black that I was seeing headlining these clubs, had put in the decades of work to build that audience that was now a stand-up audience that had been with them for a while. Meanwhile, the TV industry and the TV comedy industry seemed to be trying to shortcut that. Now, if they were going on merit and fan base and grassroots, they could develop diverse rosters doing it that way. But instead, they want the young, hip, sort of like, so they cut out the 45-year-old diversity and they say, okay, who's like a hot young person of color property that we can get, who's like 29, and who can we like boost up? And it's like they're achieving the same numbers that they would achieve if they did it in a more authentic way, but because it's sort of a lazy virtue signaling way that they go about it. So my point being, I've always said, I think in comedy, if people running it really gave a shit about comedy and did their work, they could get all the diversity that the world is clamoring for in an authentic way. But a lot of the time it feels like it's agents and managers and executives doing the shortcut way, which is like, who's a big thing right now on TikTok? Let's get him. Let's get her. Anyway, that's just to cover my own ass, so I don't sound like, for those of you that aren't longtime listeners of me, so I don't sound like the dude who's just saying like, I think funny should just be funny and we should get rid of, like, you shouldn't be hiring people because of their color. My point is that the stand-up world, in a weird way, ticket sales reflect a much more organic diversity than what maybe agents and executives promote, which is sort of a numbers game that's not steeped in as much grassroots work. The point being, I would prefer the first way. I would prefer the club way, in that you see the diversity without it being ham-handed and shoehorned in, as it sometimes is in other platforms. But my point in saying that is, I know I don't look it, so nobody feels like they get progressive points for promoting my comedy. It's like, I know he's half Haitian, but I feel like I'm just supporting, you know, Adam Sandler or Sebastian Maniscalco. And that doesn't flick my progressive bean. So I don't even know where I was going with this, but it's been frustrating dealing with that. And I guess the reason I brought that up is it was weird to be accused of not being who I am by somebody who was so driven by some sort of obsessive agenda that facts were no longer. And that was somebody on the left. And I thought to myself, you got Joe Biden making a joke about you ain't black, but meanwhile, I've got some sort of alleged progressives on Twitter basically denying me my ethnicity and my talent. And I thought, there it is. There's your parallel. And there's, so I might agree with your politics, but you are the more annoying person to deal with, angry progressive. You because I can always dismiss mentally and through the block button anybody who comes after me saying like, fuck you and your fucking politics, you liberal hack. And I go, okay, but you still didn't at least go after the comedy. So, you know, I feel like my comedy leaves unscathed, and I can that escapes my brain very quickly. That doesn't keep me up at night. What keeps me up at night is people, you know, writing comments to me that are sort of disrespecting that space that they don't know anything about. Whether it's comparing me to other content that I don't think deserves to be compared to mine. Once again, I'm speaking as the artist here, and if I sound pretentious, so be it. I'm not telling people I don't tell people what you can and can't laugh at. And if something brings you happiness, that's great. Good for you. Like, everybody enjoy what you want to enjoy. But don't expect me to sort of sit and be like, yes, because you discovered TikTok 4 weeks ago, now you think it's some sort of Charlie Chaplin, Terrence Malick, Stanley Kubrick invention. And I didn't bring, you know, just for my podcast listeners, I mean, there was a woman who did a drunk Trump TikTok, which was funny, which was sent to me mid-April, like 2 weeks before somebody else did their stuff. And it got like over 1 million hits. And if I was that woman, I guess she's not like me. I'd be pissed, because like that was like the first thing I saw of somebody pantomiming, you know, Trump things with, you know, like pretending like she was in a club drunk. And it was a really good lip sync. And I'm like, why didn't that take off? Why didn't that become the thing? Because that was the first time I'd seen that. And but this idea of people, it's a lot of comics will say it. It's sort of trite at this point. Like, I prefer to perform in front of conservatives because they don't get offended. For me, performing in front of conservatives is always weird because they may laugh at my material. They may laugh hard. But then after that show, I get a lot of awkward conversations. And I guarantee you, if I looked black, I would not be getting those conversations. Because they're often awkward. Sometimes they're, let's just say, racially insensitive. And also, I just don't, sometimes it just feels uncomfortable when somebody goes, I love Trump, but man, that impression's good. And I'm like, when you tell me you love Trump, like, it offends me. I'm sorry. Like, he's not a Republican. He's Trump. He's a vile bigot. And I don't care if it's 2020, like, the dude belongs in the 1880s, as far as I'm concerned. He's a racist, selfish grifter. And so it's like, in one way, at least, hey, the set was good, but then I go home feeling like bummed because I had to have interactions with people who clearly don't fully respect where I'm from, who I am, whether or not they know it, whether or not they're conscious of it, they're supportive of that. So it's like, to me, it's like, yeah, the set went well. I have a good tape. And then I have these awkward encounters after shows that I don't really like. On the flip side, you know, progressives are more often to shout out something like, that's not funny. Like, I had a woman one time come up to me after a show at Gotham Comedy Club. I think it was in 2019. Yeah, it was 2019. And I had a joke about how there was like a lot of Ted Bundy content. Like, they had like a documentary series about Ted Bundy, and they had a movie with Zac Efron about Ted Bundy. And my joke was basically like, guys, it's 2020. Can we stop with the white serial killers? Okay. Were there no serial killers of color that we could profile? Okay. Maybe a little more diversity in the serial killer ranks. Are you telling me there were no serial killers that were trans people? How about showcasing some of their stories of murder? And I thought that was funny. That's obviously poking fun at sort of progressives. And people laughed, but not super hard. But then a woman came up to me after the show, very respectfully, but I was out on the street. I was walking to the subway, and she like caught up to me, like, I think with her boyfriend or her date. And she was really nice. She was like, oh my God, that was such a great set. But can I make one suggestion if it's okay? And I say, yeah, sure. What? And she goes, maybe no jokes about trans people, because obviously they're kind of a really disrespected segment of the population. And I was just like, oh, well, you know, the joke isn't really about trans people. It's sort of about people who would come up to a comedian after a show and tell them what content they should do. I didn't say that to her, but that was what was going on in my head. I was like, you were more the butt of that joke, not trans people. But obviously that was, as not to use the word jokingly, but that was triggering probably. And she said it very nicely. I don't need to get into a, you don't get what comics do. What we do is we push the boundaries, and that's what the fuck we have to do. So you can't tell me, because I feel like there's a lot of comics who use that First Amendment, like, conservatives are so much more fun to perform in front of because, you know, liberals just fucking want to be PC. And a lot of time that's shitty comics, like, who are like, I said the N-word and I called the audience member a fucking cunt because that's what comics do. And it's like, no, you might be terrible at comedy. So like, you have to at least be funny, to try and get away with the I'm a comedian and you got to let me be me defense. But that's what I'm seeing now on Twitter. It's like this, as a person, I'd rather not hang out with MAGA people, but as a comedian, each group has their drawbacks, but it's amazing how I'm now getting it from TikTok to my act. Somebody told me my joke. I wrote a joke about when Adele lost all that weight. I said, oh man, Rebel Wilson just lost out on that Adele biopic Oscar nomination. A very simple joke. And of course, somebody was like, mocking, fat shaming, really? And targeting women with your jokes? And I was like, who the fuck are you? That joke is like fine. It's not saying Rebel Wilson's gross for being fat. It's saying that she would have been the logical choice to play Adele. And it's like, by Adele bettering her health, she's ruined Rebel Wilson's acting career. That's the joke. It's not, there's really no fat shaming there. And then I said to her, I was like, so women, and her thing about targeting women, I was like, so women can't be the subject of jokes, even like a PG joke. And yeah, it was just, I'm getting more of that. And I realize it's like, you can't have, this is why I just want people to go to my stand-up comedy. That is the great filter. Because if you like my stand-up comedy, then you're going to like all my content and you're probably going to come out and see me. And if you don't like my stand-up comedy, then you're just somebody who kind of likes Twitter memes and stuff. And that's okay. Like, that's the thing. I'm not saying it's not okay to enjoy TikTok or enjoy all these other things, but I'm not trying to do that. I'm not trying to be a social media presence or social media humorist. I want to be, I'm a stand-up comedian, and that's what I want to get paid for, and that's what I want to do. I want to perform, you know, 250 shows a year, make a lot of money, make people laugh, sell albums, and keep creating good stand-up comedy and other things as well. But it's this weird mishmash where you can't, there's, you know, out of my 92,000 followers, I feel like probably like 5,000 of them are the people, are the ideal fans who love the Trump impression, recognize the skill and the intelligence behind the humor, but also are like, man, I got Thoughts and Prayers and that album is killer, or Keep My Enemies Closer is so funny. Or I just like your jokes as well. Like, that's who I need and want. And it's just funny because I don't know who's worse. Obviously, more importantly, is people who don't support Trump are people I support in life. You know, that's more important to me that you not, I'd rather you not, if you don't get my jokes, I'd rather you not get my jokes and not vote for Trump than vote for Trump and think my humor is killer. But it's so funny to see now in this large group, because obviously a lot of people I picked up as followers were just like, he's bashing Trump. I wrote a thing alluding to this on Twitter, and I had to delete it because it was like, I think about five people actually got what I was saying. I wrote, hey, Trump supporters, I said, at least Trump supporters don't try to explain comedy to me. I will give them that. Now, clearly, if you're listening to me right now, you understand what I'm saying, which is I don't agree with Trump supporters at all on their choices, the way they see the world. But at least they don't fuck with my they don't like try to tell me what's funny and try to explain to me like why something is genius, because they discovered it 3 weeks ago and need to impress much more weight on it to make themselves feel like they discovered the Emperor's new videos. And the feed, one Trump supporter on his second comment basically started referring to the blacks. And I said, miss me with that shit. And then I blocked him because he's been trolling. He's been following me saying, your impression's so great. But every chance he gets, he like writes, he's like such a pro Trump clown and a real person. Like but I just had to get rid of him because I was like, no, I'm not going to have you like calling people the blacks on my thread. This is not, I'm not okay with that. Like, I don't care if Trump says it. It sounds dehuman. I sound like fucking Sherrod Brown right now. What are you doing for the working man? But no, it was, you know, it was just one of those things. And you know, the guy is like a UCLA graduate. And I'm like, you know that calling black people the blacks sounds fucking dehumanizing. And he said, he was like, what should I say? People of color? And I was like, I was like, okay, you're a dick. Like, period. Like, and so I was laughing going, okay, so on this thread that was meant as like a slight compliment to how MAGA people are at least treating my comedy, it took two comments before the MAGA guy said something blatantly and intentionally racially insensitive. Okay. Then the rest of the comments were liberals who just kind of liked it because they felt like it was bashing Trump people, even though it kind of wasn't. And were all they went on a fucking rant of like, that's because they don't get humor. That's because they're stupid. That's because, and I was like, okay, so now you're explaining my own sort of witticism to me. Perfect. Perfect. A perfect encapsulation of what this, it's like, yes, progressives, when we get off social media and out of the comedy club, I'm with you. But it was so funny to see both sides demonstrating exactly why I'm annoyed with both of them. And I'm, to make it clear, one, I believe, is a problem for society. One is annoying my humor. Very different degrees of importance there, but both annoying. But it was just, it was, I don't know, this has been a long rambling episode, and this is, you know, the righteous prick therapy sessions, but it's like, basically all I have is my legal work and walking my dog and social media comedy right now. So it's like the topics are very limited. I will say this. I watched The Witcher on Netflix. I made it 3 episodes and I hated it. I felt like it was some community theater group had won the Powerball and said, what if we do our own version of Game of Thrones? I couldn't make it through. It's only 8 episodes, and Henry Cavill, as longtime listeners of this show know, Henry Cavill is right up there with Tom Welling and Joseph Gordon-Levitt as JL Man Crush, like winners of the year, previous winners of the year. But I can't do The Witcher, man. I hate it. Like, my God, it felt like such a whack Game of Thrones. And people are like, well, if you're comparing to Game of Thrones, it's going to lose because Game of Thrones is so great. And I'm like, well, it's Netflix, and they have trillions of dollars, and they should be able to make something better than The Witcher. And yeah, I just, I did not enjoy The Witcher at all. So my next show up is Yellowstone. I DVR'd it. They reran the first season in a marathon. It's this show. I wish I'd watched it from the beginning. They've had 2 seasons so far, but Yellowstone is this show starring Kevin Costner. Now in my mind, I was like, well, Kevin Costner, I liked some of his movies, but I'm not fiending for Kevin Costner content in 2018 when the show debuted. And they buried what should have been the lead, which is, it's Taylor Sheridan's show. Now, Taylor Sheridan has written a few movies, and I basically own all of them. He wrote Sicario, he wrote Hell or High Water, and he wrote Wind River. Now, if you tell me that Taylor Sheridan has a new show or his first show, I'm watching that shit instantly. That's an instant DVR because the dude's 3 for 3 on movies with me. And that's not just 3 for 3 good movies. That's 3 for 3. I own them. Hell or High Water, just so good. And Wind River, they're all really good. Sicario's awesome. And they're all a little bit different, but damn, they are. God, his movies are so awesome. So Yellowstone is going to be my next movie that I start, my next show that I start watching. I've got season 1 DVR'd. Season 2 isn't available. I'd have to buy season 2 to watch it, but I'm going to see if maybe they run another, like a season 2 marathon, maybe before season 3 comes up, whenever that is. But, so hopefully Yellowstone is better than The Witcher, but, yeah, most people just said The Witcher, like when I asked, they were just like, yeah, no, The Witcher sucks. And I was like, God damn, why did I feel like it was good? Why did I feel like people were hyping it up? But it was like 85 to 15 negative. And I have to give a little bump because obviously people enjoy writing negative comments more than positive. So I'm even calling that, I'll give a 15% bias. That still makes it like 70-30 negative comments. So I understand now. I watched 3 full episodes and I thought that's a good enough sample. This show sucks. But yeah, so that's really the only content that I've watched recently. Oh, I will say this. If you've made it this far, listening to me lament the comedy civil war that is going on in my head and in my Twitter thread, I watched the first part of the Lance documentary, and I got to say, it's better than The Last Dance, which I also find funny. It's like a condensed version. The Last Dance, and then later they're like, "Here's is Lance just a shortened version of The Last Dance?" But it's about Lance Armstrong, so I watched the first two hours, which is a two-part, four-hour documentary. I loved it, and I thought, looking at Lance Armstrong, I was like, man, this dude at 15 would be played by Jesse Eisenberg, and he like morphs into Channing Tatum. Real glow up once he became a successful cyclist. But Lance is, for me, and I love basketball, and I loved seeing like old highlights, and I thought it was a good, they kept talking about like, oh, we followed Michael Jordan in his final season. That was just basically a Michael Jordan retrospective documentary. And it was good, and there were some good insightful moments and some good they delved a little bit into Jordan, and you know, you learn a little bit more about him, and it was good. It was like, I'd say it was a B+, but people are treating it like an A+, because they're basically, it's like a sports conjugal visit. Everybody's like, oh my God, I'm so starved for sports content. Oh my God, this B+ feels like an A+. Lance, on the other hand, after watching the first part, I think Lance is a legit A. I mean, who knows what the second part is, but it's going to be the scan. It's going to be him winning all the Tour de France's and the scandal and everything. But man, that first part of Lance, I highly recommend it. I just found it to be much more interesting and raw. And, you know, maybe because I know a lot more about basketball than I do cycling, I thought the first part of the Lance documentary was already better than The Last Dance. So there you go. If you needed some positivity, I'm going to start Yellowstone this week. And I am enjoying the Lance documentary on ESPN. But yeah, I'm sure some people who may hear this, I'll get comments saying like, hey, you shouldn't let it get to you, but let people enjoy what they want. Or yeah, you know, like, keep it to yourself. But I'm like, the problem is, the one thing I've always done with my comedy career is not keep things to myself, whether I think it's the business practices or comedians that stink. Like, for instance, I think Hannah Gadsby's new special is out this week, and I'll probably watch it. But this rise, this liberal like Kubrickization of Sarah Cooper's TikTok videos, I just find odd, and it reminds me of Nanette, Hannah Gadsby's critically acclaimed comedy special that I thought was like okay. Like I thought it was witty, and then I thought the last 20 minutes were just like, oh, this isn't funny. This is like a soapbox. And I don't even mean that you're not allowed to do that, but judging it as a comedy. I said this about the show Transparent on Amazon. When I watched Transparent, I was always like, I can see why people think this is a good show, but I don't really see why people think this is a good comedy. And for me, if you're nominated as a comedy, then comedy has to be the first, like, if I call The Godfather a comedy, then does that make The Godfather the greatest comedy of all time because it's a great movie and I'm calling it a comedy? Or does it make it like a good thing, but not necessarily great comedy? That's how I felt about Nanette. I was like, hey, it wasn't bad. It was witty. It was a little like Austin, you know, Dr. Evil, pinky to the mouth, witty. And then it was like a serious sort of talk, and that's okay. But you know, it didn't. I was stunned when it was the best, like Montreal Festival, like named it the best special of the year. And I also thought, what was funny is I heard about Hannah Gadsby from the New Yorker podcast, like 2 weeks before her special went live. The New Yorker podcast was like, she is going to change comedy. And in my head, I was like, New Yorker, what the fuck do you know about stand-up comedy? And then they were right. And in my head, I was like, I'll give the New Yorker credit because they called it, but I don't really want to live in a stand-up world where the New Yorker is the tastemaker when it comes to stand-up comedy. I'm starting to sound like Sherrod Brown again. But anybody who didn't, if you didn't realize you were going to get a quality Sherrod Brown impression out of this podcast, you were sorely mistaken. But Senator from Ohio, if you don't know. But she's got a new special out, and I'm just laughing because I'm like, this is, there is that segment of progressives who really want to put agenda first and laughs second. And that's kind of how it feels like watching my Trump impression get sort of like short shrift from the masses. It's gotten a ton of respect and a ton of followers for me, but it's like, it's playing a distant, you know, Sarah Cooper's TikToks have basically gone secretariat, just the 24 lengths ahead, which I think is absurd. And I don't mean that that's not a knock. I just think it's absurd that, like, between the virtue signaling and the, like, oh my God, we have to make this into, you know, this is French cinema at its finest. Like, what? And that's the sensibility I hate being put in. It's that retroactive, I have to make this thing like that progressives seem to do. You know, conservatives will strip away all meaning and be like, it's funny. I don't care if he said the N-word 12 times. Larry the Cable Guy is a fucking genius. Not that Larry Cable Guy has said that. I'm just saying, using that as an example. And the flip side is, if you believe in the person's agenda, then you start to imprint higher value and higher substance to something. So it's like, oh, this is not mere TikTok. This is, I would say, Fellini-esque. And it's as if Peter Sellers and Terrence Malick got together and had a powwow with Stanley Kubrick, and Orson Welles oversaw the whole production starring Charlie Chaplin. That's what those videos. Sorry if you don't get the brilliance. And I'm sorry, that stuck with me so much. The fact that it went from people, what bothered me, it went from people saying, oh, it's all comedy. You can laugh. Both are good. And I go, okay, I'll accept that. I don't sort of fully agree, if I'm being honest, as a content creator, as a comedian. I don't agree with that, but I'm willing to accept that because humor is subjective. So I can have my own opinion, but I'm also not going to tell people they can't have their opinion and they can't enjoy multiple things. That's what comedy is. But it really just stuck with me in a very negative way, the more comments I saw of the virtue signaling and the enhancing of what it means, because it feels, instead of just saying, I really enjoy that lip syncing video, now you have to turn it into some sort of brilliance that needs to be explained, by the way, to a comedian and a smart guy, me. Like, you have to explain to me, like, that I'm not quite getting why this is next level. Old dude from Berkeley who probably has never been in a comedy club and never written a funny thing in his life. It's just, this was just a rant. So you got one documentary recommendation and just another rant about what the hell we're doing with comedy. So my advice to everybody is laugh at what you want to laugh at. But show some restraint in how condescending you are about comedy, because it doesn't make the comedy any better if you're condescending about it. It just makes you, as I continue to condescend about comedy, by the way, but it doesn't, explaining comedy to a comedian is just you rationalizing why you have to love something more than it probably should be. But yeah, that's another episode in the books. I'm fucking tired. My voice is tired. Time to get to fucking work on legal work now. So just another day in paradise, to quote Phil Collins. So that's it, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for letting me vent, get this off my chest. But, you know, like a disclaimer, this is nothing against anybody's comedy. It's just, I'm entitled to my opinions too. And I don't like my comedy being disrespected. And I don't like, you know, people who support my comedy being condescended to, as things get overinflated. Like comedy, but you don't have to make, just because you like it. Here's my message. Conservatives, thanks for being cool with comedy, but in total honest, I think your support of Trump is disgusting and deplorable and speaks horribly of you as a person. And to progressives, thanks for liking the comedy, but just because you like comedy doesn't mean you have to make it some sort of mission to make a more profound statement on society. Sometimes you can like simple things. Sometimes a fart can make you laugh. A fart doesn't have to represent carbon emissions in a dystopian universe under Republicans. Sometimes a fart can just be a noise and gas. It doesn't have to be something deeper, and you can enjoy it. But don't always try to push your agenda into comedy. Sometimes comedy can just be funny. Okay, so on that note, there's Jerry Springer's final thought, a long, meandering, rambling mess of an episode, but thank you for listening. To my loyal people who stay with this podcast, I will just say to you, subscribe to the YouTube, give this podcast 5 stars, and definitely stream my stand-up albums, and go buy Fireside Craps the Deuce, because we're still trying to get a big album sale push for the month of May, so we still got another week. And if you've already bought it or you haven't bought it, can't afford it, go give it 5 stars on iTunes. I don't know why I'm stuck at 58 ratings on iTunes for that album, but it should be well over 100. So if you've got no money, that's totally free, and I'll thank you for it in advance. So thank you, and I will see you next Tuesday.